Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this April 5th, 2023, 10:04 on the clock. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. Today, we are going to be spending the entire hour with our friends at the Wood County Sheriff's Department. We have Sheriff Sean Becker with us. Good morning, Sheriff.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Good to see you, and you brought a friend with.
Well, I wouldn't call him a friend.
Okay, yeah, I went too far there.
That right away. Yeah, he actually is proud to say he's a friend of mine, but Scott Goldberg, he oversees our investigation division, and we've got something that, you know, we'll want to talk about with Bitcoin that happened recently.
Excellent. I did want to talk about that with you, too.
That we want to get that information out to the public because it's something that we didn't know anything about. And
we'll get into it in a second. I really want to take some time with that one.
Sure.
Scott, thanks for being here. Also want to thank Taylor and our friends at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media being here. Be sure to subscribe to their page. Type into your YouTube search bar, Wisconsin Rapids Community Media, and subscribe to that page. So I didn't mean to cut you off, Sheriff, but that is a big one. That's we've seen a couple of stories about this, and some. I was wondering how your guys, from your end, how it's looking.
With that case, it was... it's something that I wouldn't say that we weren't prepared for. We adapted to the situation once we got the complaint, and it's an awareness thing and that people need to know about, because there's scammers out there doing anything and everything to get people's money, and it's just terrible that they pick on our seniors.
Yeah.
It really is, and this was a situation just like that, where they realize the scammers know that these Bitcoin kiosks, these like ATMs that are starting to pop up all over that we weren't aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, unfortunately, these seniors got sucked in with a considerable amount of money. And Scott and our investigation team did an awesome job working with our DA's office, our corp counsel, because once the victims put their money into this kiosk, it's essentially gone, but it's not, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And we worked really hard as a team to recover the money that was in the kiosk, because that's evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that owned this kiosk, you know, the cryptocurrency and the Bitcoin, they're not from Wisconsin. They're, I think, based out of Florida, and they were threatening us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't go in and take that money. Like, no. Give us the money back so we can, you know, take care of our victims here in Wood County. And like I said, I can't say enough about Scott and our investigation team and the approach we took with the teamwork. And it wasn't just our department. It was, you know, the district attorney's office, our corp counsel. We checked all of the boxes to make sure that we were, you know, handling this appropriately. But, you know, I'd like to really defer some of this over to Scott, because he did the work. His team did the work. You know, I was there helping, but, you know, we even had our rescue personnel come in, and because we weren't getting any cooperation from the people that owned the kiosk and this Bitcoin. They did not want to work with us because they felt it was their money. And it's like, no, it's evidence. And, you know, our duty, and I wouldn't say obligation, but, you know, we have to take care of the people that live here in Wood County. And these people got scammed out of a lot of money, and they deserve to have it back. And we did everything that we could to get it back, and we did.
When it comes to these keyboard cowards, it's something that I thought about a lot over this subject, this story, and I hadn't really thought about it much beforehand. I think we talked about, you and I, and we've talked about on our other shows plenty of times, how we keep putting more and more on our police officers, on our sheriff's departments, more responsibility, more things to do. But this is something that I thought was interesting, because I can't imagine, you know, officers that were going to school for this 20 years ago, 30 years ago, cybercrime, like, I wouldn't even know where to begin if I was one of those officers. That's a whole new world to me, which is part of where these cowards really, like, that's why they are able to get away with some things that they are. So, Scott, for you in your position, and you can give that to us as well, this is it's different for you and your I won't say generation, but for you and your group, the team that you came in with and stuff, because now that is the new world. That is something that officers have to know about, officers have to work on, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had to develop, we kind of had to develop as time goes on. I've been in law enforcement for over 17 years, and when I started URI, it didn't, you heard of this very rarely. There was like mail-in scams and things like that that took place. But now it's so common, so disgusting that it's taking place. And it's not just our community. It's happening all over the country, all over the world probably. And unfortunately, a lot of times we're unable to recover the money. And in this situation, this was a new scam that we had not heard of. And so we kind of had to adapt and kind of learn a lot about it really fast, like within a day or so. So just to kind of educate the listeners about what these kiosks are and how they work, it's easiest to explain it using some examples. So cryptocurrency isn't regulated like banks. And I think that's where a lot of people get confused, and a lot of people need to understand that if their money's scammed or if their money's taken from them, it's gone.
Yeah.
There's no federal guidelines for some of these cryptocurrency transactions. And I think just so people understand how these kiosks work and the risks that you have, I'll give this example. So with that example, is kind of like a gun show, the best way to explain it. So with a gun show, if I go to a gun show, I am buying a gun from a person. I'm not buying it from a store like Gander Mountain or Cabela's. I'm buying it from a person. Therefore, I don't have to follow the federal guidelines or state regulations and fill out the paperwork. So with cryptocurrency, how these kiosks are working is there's a private company or a group of individuals that own this cryptocurrency, and they're selling little bits of it through these kiosks. Instead of, so they're not brokering the money, like buying it through trade. They're selling a little bit of theirs. And by doing that, they don't have to follow the federal guidelines. And they're skating underneath the regulations. And we actually contacted the state in reference to this because it was confusing to us how they were able to do this and how the money wasn't tracked. And we were straight up told that it's very much connected to money laundering. And it's very easy to launder money using these kiosks. And some of it, unfortunately, is connected to our drug world. It's hard for a drug dealer to they get $10,000 cash. You can't just go put that in the bank because there's going to be some questions about where did you get $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 worth of cash. But if you put it in one of these kiosks, not to educate people in the wrong way, but if you put it in one of these kiosks, pay the fee, and then you cash out on your investment, is how it's seen, seems, the banks can't question it because you got your money from this investment that you had, this cryptocurrency that you cashed out on. So that's how the kiosks are kind of getting around. I shouldn't say the kiosks. There's several companies across the country that we're finding. And we also found it that other agencies within Central Wisconsin are also struggling with some of these scams that took place. And so it was a fast and furious few days educating ourselves on it. And I'll be the first to say I'm far from an expert when it comes to cryptocurrency. So it was a very, very interesting to learn.
I wouldn't feel too bad about that, Scott. It seems like the people running cryptocurrency companies don't know much about it either. So I wouldn't feel too bad about that.
Very good point.
And I bring that, and I say it as a joke, but I also bring it up because that there are things that we can do to help the community. There are things that we can give you that are kind of outliers. I think a lot of people like mysteries. And every good mystery has some red herrings in it, has some things that stand out and stuff. These are red herrings. There are certain things that almost every one of these scammers are going to do. Now, first, right out the gate, if they're talking cryptocurrency, click hang up. Hang up. I'm not trying to talk bad about cryptocurrency, but if you care about cryptocurrency, you already know about cryptocurrency. You've already looked into it, or you could do that on your own. You can find out more on your own. But there's something right there that kind of stands out, like, okay. There's other things, too. Scott, Sheriff, I'm sure that you guys can talk about this better than I can, but
yeah, so one thing, I just to warn the public, I think it's very important to know that your bank is never going to call you and say, come take money out of your account and do anything with it.
Yeah.
They're never going to demand that you come take your money out. And that was a case, that was the situation in this case. And I had spoken with the victims directly and told them that we were going to put a press release out there. And they're like, yes, please do. We don't want this to happen to anybody else. They feel fortunate that they got their money back. In so many cases, they don't. Mm-hmm. But a bank, an organization is never going to, or a company like Amazon is never going to physically call you. They're way too busy to call you and say, go take money out of your account. And here's the big one I want to really instill into people. If it doesn't feel right, pause, call dispatch, Wood County Central Dispatch. Either talk to an officer or dispatchers, or a lot of times know about these scams themselves and can direct you to be like, pause. Go start asking some questions at your bank or your financial institution, because if it doesn't feel right, it's probably not right, okay?
We're here as a species because of that feeling. We're here because of that gut feeling. Trust your gut.
Yes, that's correct. And so if there's one thing I will say is you can always contact your financial institution, your credit cards, your investments, and you can a lot of times just pause them by making a quick phone call and telling them, hey, I think I'm being scammed. Mm-hmm. I want my accounts frozen for, you know, a day, 2 days, whatever, until you can figure out if this is actually taking place, and do that, and then contact us, you know, right away. 'Cause if you delay it, people are right. Scams take place, and you can lose a lot of money very quickly, And it can be difficult to get that money back. And so we were so happy in this case to be able to actually physically put our hands on that money.
Yeah.
And with the support, obviously, of our district attorney's office. And, you know, obviously, we wrote some search warrants for that.
I was going to ask. Okay. So, because it sounds like – go ahead. Sorry, Scott.
No, you know, and obviously, we, like Sheriff Becker said, we took the appropriate steps. We had to, you know, dot our I's and cross the T's to make sure that we were doing everything legally correct. And because this company, frankly, they're upset. And they're victims of this case. They're victims, too, of this case. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, they know it's unlikely that that money that was stolen will ever be returned to them, too. We are still investigating it. I can't talk too directly to the case because it's still an open investigation as we're still trying to track down exactly where that the rest of that money went. But where it gets difficult is these cryptocurrency, they call them like wallets. It's a virtual wallet that you hold this money in. And the problem why it becomes difficult is these wallets can move very quickly from one person to another very quickly, and it can be held offline. It can be held on a thumb drive, for instance. Mm-hmm. So once it goes offline, our investigation almost comes to a standstill, okay? But again, I'm not an expert with this. We did also reach out to the Department of Justice and spoke with individuals that deal with it a little more than we do. Mm-hmm. So, and one of our investigators, Investigative Sergeant Jeremy Keith, he's got the most knowledge in our division on this. He works on computer crimes and cyber crimes. So he was kind of leading this up. And so he did just an absolutely outstanding job. And I was happy for him to see this outcome too.
Yeah, especially because we don't always get this kind of outcome. No. So I really appreciate your work, the work of the whole team on this one. And I want to say I appreciate and say thank you to the people that came forward as well. Part of the reason these things keep going is shame. The idea of, oh, I got duped. And nobody likes getting duped. And the only thing we don't like more than that is other people knowing we got duped. So coming forward, that's brave to me. That's brave to come forward to let people know, not only our officers, but let community members know, spread the word about these things. Mm-hmm. They can't hide in the shadows if there are no shadows. We bring them to the light. We bring these stories to people. And hopefully we have less and less of people being scammed.
Yeah, it's part of technology that, you know, that we try to stay up on. But this one was, like I said in the beginning, it was something that we haven't experienced. We didn't even know these kiosks were around.
Yeah.
And then, you know, working the investigation from there. And our priority was, you know, what we struggled with right away was the money's in that machine.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And Scott's right. The company that owns that machine is a victim. But our priority is their victim here.
Yes.
You know, and unfortunately with the company, you have to have your own safeguards in there as well. Just like any banking institution, they have their own fraud department. And, you know, it would have been nice if we had a little bit more cooperation with this company. But, you know, again, they're not from Wisconsin. Their whole priority is making money. And I get that. That's the American way. We all want to make, you know, a decent living. And I get that. But when you are part of that process of somebody being victimized, it's, you know, our priority is to help that individual that lives here, right? And did we like having to go and destroy this machine? No, we didn't. But that's what they forced us to do.
Yeah.
We were not going to sit there any longer than we had to. And here you have a machine that's in a business sitting there, and people are seeing it as they go by with, you know, we put evidence tape on it. We said, we unplugged it.
Mm-hmm.
And they got more upset about us unplugging the machine so people couldn't still continue to use it so they could make money. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Our issue is with, you know, this victim that lost $9,000.
Yeah.
You know, and it's in that machine. We're going to get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like Scott described, we, instead of going there and just getting it, we did what we needed to do. You know, again, hats off to the district attorney's office for the advice they gave us, and then, you know, working with our corporation counsel, because if we get sued, that's who's going to represent us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we did everything that we were supposed to do, and I hope that other law enforcement agencies take a look at this and follow the same suit, because this isn't exclusive to, you know, Wood County or Wisconsin Rapids. It's happening to people all over, you know, not only our state but the country, and we're behind the eight ball with regulation. You know,
yes.
Bottom line, and that's one thing that Scott and I have been talking about, trying to get at least something moving forward here in Wood County that will prohibit any type of this action or something like this happening again. We're looking at, you know, these machines need to be regulated more, and can we do that locally? You know, can we do something with an ordinance that at least have some safeguards out there that either prohibits having these machines anywhere in our county so other people can't get victimized, or is there some, you know, something in the middle that we can do to make sure that the, you know, people aren't going to get scammed? So that's the next phase of this investigation, is looking at how can we, you know, move forward where other people can't get victimized. And how can we do that? That's part of the public safety part of this.
So, because to me, I agree with you, and I think that is the next step to this legislation, something like that. If you were writing the bill yourself, you kind of gave us a little description of what you think should be in there. That kind of, these are the kind of things, you have some regulation on these machines. That's something that would certainly help help them being from future victims.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, for me right now, I mean, this is moving way too fast. Mm. We shouldn't even have them.
Yeah.
All right. Right now you have ATMs, okay? But I get what technology is and where the future is going, you know, with cryptocurrency. I mean, it's kind of like the world currency, you know, and probably, I don't know if it'll be in my lifetime, but, you know, it, at some point that's probably how it's going to be. Mm. And that's just going to be the nature of you know, society. And
yeah, we're becoming less of a cash society. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And that's happening. But, you know, wait a minute. Let's slow down a little bit to make sure that we're doing it right and making sure that, you know, not just our seniors, but everybody isn't, you know, they're doing it safely. And our money's our money. And,
yeah,
you know, we've all been victims at one point in our life, and we don't forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And the big picture of what happened in this situation that I'm proud of, you know, proud of Scott and our team and everybody that are part of it. We got this money back to the victims there. And that doesn't happen very often. You know, we had another scam not that, like a month ago, where a senior individual had sent $7,000 cash to somebody on the East Coast because they were calling him and saying that, you know, your nephew has been involved in a car accident and, you know, playing that care card and sent the money out, and it's gone.
Mm.
And you can't get that back.
No.
You know, and it's really sad when you look at the people that are at that point in their life, they have their savings, and scammers know that. And that's why they go after them, because, you know, people that have, you know, been successful throughout their life, they know that they have, you know, money available, and now how can we get it? And they play on somebody's heart, and that's terrible.
With trying to catch up in the law books with all this going on. It reminds me of other times in society where this has happened, and we've been able to adjust and adapt. But we're able to mostly because of the people on the ground level, and that's people like yourselves and everything. So again, greatly appreciate the work that you did on this, Scott, that our all of our team did to make this happen. And hopefully it gives us some strength going forward, you know, with the next scam, because there will be other scams, there will be other things out there. Give us a little more, and we know a little bit more now than we did before, and so on as we go forward here with this. Because I don't want to sound like mean here or anything, but if we ask legislatures to get it do this, I don't know how long it's going to take. So it's really falls on our hands, and in many ways, your guys is going back to the conversation of things going on, you know, our law enforcement's plates that weren't necessarily part of the job design. But it's on us to be able to do this. So we can point the finger, we can, you know, complain, or that's not going to get anything done. Right. We have to share this knowledge. We have to work together. And that involves not only people being scammed and coming forward, but like what you were touching on earlier, both of you have, about sharing that information with other departments, with other states, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so doing a little research into this when we were working on the case, when I spoke to the individual who works for the Department of Finances through the state, she did mention that there are several states and communities that have ordinances that I've been kind of looking at, you know.
Right on.
And because of that, I will say the most advanced place is right now that has put some pretty strict restrictions on is the state of New York, where basically they allow these machines, but they have an annual fee of, I think, like $5,000.
Mm.
And they're forcing them to insure the machines and the money that goes in and out of them. So they're kind of a little in front of the eight ball. We're behind it. Our state's behind it. It's going to be difficult, I think, to... Because some of it's just not focused yet, you know, until it feels like sometimes so many people have to be victimized and it has to become such a problem before we're going to see laws or restrictions in this area. So Sheriff Becker's right. We've been kind of looking at it. We'll kind of take little baby steps forward, but maybe we can get something locally here to at least get some warnings out. If nothing else, create an ordinance or something to regulate the fact that if we're going to have these machines, we're going to know where they're at. One, two, be able to put some type of a warning that customer is going to look at and understand that there's some very big risk that potentially your money could be gone if you put that money in that machine.
Before we wrap up the segment and get to our break and then come back, I did want to help people with this. If somebody out there has been scammed or they think they're being scammed, what would you say the best first step would be, Scott?
Yeah, the first step is to obviously call our dispatch, let them know. Two, freeze your accounts, slow down, stop, freeze your accounts. Something that people should be doing regularly anyways is running credit reports. I can't count the amount of times I've read reports where people find out that they owned a car, they bought a car that they didn't know about, or they have a loan out in their name, or they have a credit card out in their name. So checking your credit regularly, and then you're right, report it. We can't help people if we don't know about it. Okay. And if we don't know about the crime taking place, and there's no shame in it. We've all been duped before in one way or another. It's best to report it, and we'll do what we can. We'll tell you we can't ever guarantee that we'll solve a crime, but we can't solve it if we don't know about it. So come forward, let us know. One, two, freeze your accounts immediately. Get a hold of your bank. And just remember that nobody's ever going to reach out to you and tell you to take money out of your account and do something with it. So,
well said. We'll take a break right on that. We'll come back, have some more conversation with our friends at the Wood County Sheriff's Department and Wisconsin Rapids Community Media here on Morning Magazine at WFHR. Welcome back to Morning Magazine here at WFHR, locally grown radio. 10:32 on the clock, and we are spending the hour with Wood County Sheriff's Department. We have Sheriff Becker in with us, along with Scott, and thank you both for being here again. Appreciate the time. I know you've got some things to talk about, sir, but one thing I did want to bring up because I thought it was interesting. I'm an actor, and I've talked about this before, and somehow this guy's got more TV time than I've had, and I want to know your agent. I wanted to bring attention to a story that I did catch on TV when I saw you in the story of the juvenile that was found with the thermal drone.
Oh, thanks for bringing that up.
I was very interested in talking with you about this.
No, you have to look at, you know, I always talk about teamwork, and that's proof right there, where you have law enforcement working with your first responders and fire departments, and how much we rely on each other. Jerry Meyer over at Pittsville Fire Department, awesome guy, awesome leader over there, awesome teammate. You know, once the parents called in that their son was missing, he went for a walk with his dog, and you know they looked for him for about an hour, and then realized, okay, he's not here. Out in a rural area, you know, called it in. You know, we responded right away, got the fire department there, our rescue unit, and, you know, you look at not only the teamwork, but the technology and the investment that our community makes in us, not just law enforcement, but our fire departments. And they had a drone. They got that up pretty quickly, located him. They were able to find him. And I tell you what, the local media, they got the opportunity to see that footage and just show the people that, you know, that we have that equipment to help us in those situations. And the outcome, it couldn't have been any better. You know, it really couldn't. The juvenile didn't have to be transported. You know, he's checked out on the scene and went back to his family. So just one of those stories that, you know, you can't highlight enough, the teamwork that you get law enforcement going there right away, getting the information that we can pass along to our fire department, our volunteers, and then you get a command post set up, and then you get out there, you get people out on foot looking for this missing child. And then, and again, the equipment that we have available now, I can't say enough on the support that we get from the community for our volunteers. You know, a lot of our rural fire departments are volunteer based, just like a rescue unit, and we're hurting for people to be stepping up and being part of that. But here's a situation that just showed that how important it is. You know, that, you know, you got, like I said, a rural area. You know, we depend on the Remington Fire Department, you know, and that's, you know, a handful of people. And then you have the Pittsville Fire Department. All right, we got more people coming there. We have a rescue unit. And as that situation starts to grow, you get more and more people coming in to help out. And the end of the situation couldn't have been any better. I was at a presentation yesterday, and I talk a lot about CIT, crisis intervention, you know, team training that we've been doing for many, many years for our law enforcement officers. And now we put ourselves in a position to not only continue that training, but now we're doing like advanced courses that's kind of a spin-off of CIT. Like, hey, let's look at some things that we touch upon in that week-long training that we could kind of expand. And we did one on veterans a few months ago, and now we did one yesterday on autism. You know, because, you know, we get into situations where as law enforcement officers, we might find somebody or somebody's reported missing that's autistic. And it expands upon that, what we should be looking for, what information should be out there. Talking about Project Lifesaver, but this case came up. Like I said, Jerry Miner came and did an awesome presentation about how we deal with these kind of situations when they come in. Unfortunately, they happen. And we had a tragedy many, many years ago with Benji Heil. Yeah. And something that I'll never forget, I was an investigator at the time, along with a dear friend of mine, Jay Schroeder, and we were assigned to that case while, you know, the autistic boy was missing. Mm-hmm. And the end result wasn't what just happened. Yeah. And it was a tragedy that we'll never forget. You know, especially as law enforcement officers, when you deal with those situations, it's hard and you never forget. But, you know, working through that tragedy, a positive that came out of it is Project Lifesaver. You know, and that was part of the presentation yesterday where Jerry spoke of it. And then Sarah McCormick came in, who's been overseeing the program for many years. And when you have passionate people that are overseeing a program, you get a better result, don't you? You get
yeah.
something that, you know, you can present to people and bring them in and get an understanding. And, you know, just about not only that program, but, you know, when you talk about that, the at-risk community, it doesn't get any bigger than somebody that is an autistic child or an adult and dealing with those situations. It's not easy for, you know, the parents, family members, or caregivers, but they're an at-risk, you know, they're at-risk people that are people, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. Again, I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but, you know, it's proud to see that we're continuing the CAT programming or training, and we're expanding upon it. And there's still a lot of interest within our law enforcement community, and that's huge, because I've always preached mental health. There's nothing bigger than that,
yeah.
in my opinion. You know, yes, there's addiction issues, but those are huge too, but they're connected. And I really think that the more we work on that simultaneously, the better we're going to be.
You didn't do this intentionally, but I appreciate the breakdown, the involvement of the community, the importance of the community support and all that, because, and this is just me talking here, not to get political, but I was really disappointed to see Marshfield not pass that referendum to get them some more firefighters and some more help up there. We expect so much from these institutions, from our fire department, our law enforcement, all these things. And then when it comes to spending an extra bit of money so that they can do more homework, so that they can be more up to date on these things, we don't do that. Like, we'll talk a good game about supporting Blue or these kind of things. We'll put a poster in front of our house or something like that. But when it comes to go time to actually put your money where your mouth is, literally, we don't see that happening. And it's not just in Marshfield. I'm not picking on them. It goes on throughout the whole country. We here in this community, if we don't have that drone, I don't know how that story ends.
Right.
And that's, to me, like, that's just one tiny little example. Scott, not intentionally, but gave us a couple examples earlier. We're dealing with new crimes. Like, mm-hmm. there's new crimes being invented. There are new things going on, things that no law enforcement agent was started out really, even if they just got into school, they're able to work on and everything. This is that new. So how do you guys get good at this stuff? Well, you got to take classes. You got to be able to time to it. That means that you're not able to be on parole, patrol, so you need somebody else to. This all makes pretty much sense to me and to most taxpayers, I would think. But again, we see these referendums come up, and like, no, I'm not spending the $20 extra on my taxes. I don't care. Let my house burn, apparently. I'm sorry to be blunt. It's just me talking again, nobody else here, but it drives me nuts.
Yeah, and you know, and I get your frustration. I think that we all feel that. We also pay taxes, you know, and that's the trade-off: public safety and paying for it. And that's a tough thing to talk about. You know, I understand where the citizens of Marshfield are coming from. I mean, they're paying for a new jail.
Yeah,
you know, and that's a lot of money. And mm-hmm. I know we've talked about that a lot, but you know, to go back on that, I mean. That situation that, you know, we've been talking how many years about, and I can't say enough positive things about our county board.
Yeah,
you know, the leaders in Wisconsin Rapids and the approach they took with that. And I'm not saying Marshfield did something wrong with this. You know, with maybe they didn't get all the information out there. I don't know.
Yeah,
but I can say, speaking on behalf of the jail project, mm-hmm. we did. We went out there and we got the information. Our county board worked together. They reached out to all the constituents that are out there and look at what we're moving forward with. Do we want to pay more in taxes? No.
No.
But you have to look at the whole situation and it was justified. You know, I'm not saying that didn't happen in Marshfield, you know, because that's not fair for me to say, but sometimes people have to be patient and move forward with and provide the best service that they can. You know, I will say that the Marshfield Fire Department and Police Department are great people. Their hearts are in it. They're doing what they do because they have passion for public service and public safety. They just have to work through a tough situation on staffing, and they'll get through it. Give it some time.
I've been poor my whole life. I relate, I identify, and I empathize with anybody not wanting to have to spend a couple extra bucks on their taxes. I don't take that lightly. I will say that money does you no good in a community that you're not safe in. That money does you no good if you are not with us. There's so many things that I will come back with children or this or a safe community. To me, you're gonna have to spend, but that's life. That's mm-hmm. this whole thing we've all already agreed to and everything. We went on a side angle here. I didn't mean to go to it and everything, but I did want to make sure to touch on that just because I thought that the two stories connected a bit.
And you look at the our first responders, and I touched on a little bit about the volunteers, and it just seems less and less, unfortunately. And but I will say this as a very positive highlight. Would be our rescue unit, our Wood County Rescue Unit, did a fundraiser, a calendar raffle that sold out, where they're raffling off money and firearms. And it got a lot of attention. And the rescue unit did, just a phenomenal job of getting out there in the community. And the support is just huge. Dave Westfall and his family, I don't know if anybody gets the opportunity to take a look at their Facebook page, but they did the drawing was every day they either raffled off a firearm or cash, and the way they did it was just comical. Hey, make it fun. Thank you for the community support here. And then they draw a name every time, and they do a skit with it. It was awesome. But highlighting two things. One, the reality of it is hard to understand going forward, because we don't have people stepping up as much as we used to. That's hard, and we do need the people to step up and be volunteers and serve the community. We need that, and that's a huge part of it. And then the other thing to highlight is the support. Our rescue unit works on a very little budget. Many years ago, they're cut, but with that situation, drew a ton of attention to a rescue unit and how much support is out there, and that's something that we all can rally behind, mm-hmm. and very proud to be part of that. And it hurt to go through that as a member of our department, and just to see that these volunteers, they're volunteers that want to serve their community, got put on the chopping block.
Yeah.
And that was wrong. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely wrong. But with going through that situation, drew attention to how important our rescue unit was, and they became better. Mm. They don't just exclusively respond to Southwood County. They're going through the whole county. And every volunteer fire department or any fire department within Wood County, if they need them, can call them. Whether or not they need them, that's up to them, but they're available. And with that community support, not only just with this recent raffle, the Legacy Foundation just funded an airboat.
Mm.
There's no airboat in Wood County besides a rescue unit. Now, that airboat can be used anywhere, not only in Wood County, but even going beyond, because, that could save somebody's life no matter where they're at.
Yeah.
You have that, and just, the movement that our rescue units gone is just the awareness of how important they are and highlighting the volunteerism that, our first responders just don't get enough credit, and their families don't either.
Mm-hmm.
When we were talking about the last day of the raffle, I got the opportunity probably just to talk about them for 30 seconds, and just to see the rescue members there while we're filming and their family members there.
Mm.
I think the family members are forgotten so much, supporting that person. It's not just one, it's that team, that's that family, and they come together because they're doing it for the passion of serving the community. And it'd be nice to have more people like that out there.
If somebody is interested in volunteering or helping out, is there a number, is there a way we can direct them?
Give the Sheriff's Department a call, or you'll look online. Dave Westfall did a very nice speech talking about volunteerism, and he wrote the speech out because I don't think he wanted to miss anything, and he was a little bit nervous before doing the announcement, and I'm like, if you don't want to do it, don't. But then I looked at him, I'm like, no, no, you need to do that. And he just talked about when he joined Rescue, you know, over 20 years ago, how competitive it was. Like, you know, you didn't get on right away. But now if you want to be on Rescue, you're on. You pass the background check and you are part of the team. You know, and it just changed so much from, you know, 20 plus years ago. And that's the whole part of, you know, being a first responder. It's not like it was, you know, and I hope that as we move forward, it changes a bit, because just the, it's unfortunate that it just doesn't seem the interest is there as it was.
Yeah, we need more of that community involvement. We need more of that support and more of that. Whenever there's an opportunity, we encourage you to volunteer. And it's not, it is volunteering, but it's not just that. It is investing. Yeah. You are investing in your community. You're putting back into your community. It, I believe, has given you quite a bit.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up and go to break, when it comes to a missing person, we all seen TV shows, movies, they all tell us we can't do anything until 24 hours or what have you. But if I'm somebody who is, that's not correct. I wanted to get that out there right away. But also, how long a person should wait before contacting law enforcement. I heard from somebody during the week that was talking about this story and saying how they were worried about bothering law enforcement because their kid just took off and didn't tell him or something like that, and that kind of thing. And I don't want to speak for you guys, but that doesn't seem what you would want either.
No, call right away. Yeah. You know, if you find out that that somebody's missing, whether it's an adult or child, you know, that you're caring for, and they're not there, I mean, that's what we're there for. I mean, we're not going to be upset that you called us and then on the way there, you located your child or loved one, whoever you're caring for. We're fine with that. You know, I mean, sooner than better, you know, sooner than later. I mean, it, call us.
I think you can respect something and not fear it. And I think part of the problem that we've gotten into, and there's no one thing to blame here. This is a societal thing that we all got to take responsibility for. That we went from respecting our departments and our police to fearing. And I don't think that, again, that that's something that happened because of this one incident or this one thing. I think that that's something that just builds. Now, we can fix that, though. That's not something that's infixable or anything like that. It takes a lot of the work that you're hearing these guys talk about today. It takes a lot of community involvement and a lot of the community having your guys' back as well. Accountability goes a long way. I don't think see this as something that can't we can't get there. But it just sitting here talking about it and everything, that is something that pops in my head right away that I think is part of the issue that we can fix, that, that we can make better. I don't know if you guys are big. No, it's a fire department. It's not the same thing. But we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap up the hour here with our friends at the Wood County Sheriff's Department on Morning Magazine at WFHR. Welcome back to Morning Magazine here at WFHR, locally grown radio. April 5th, 2023, 10:51 on the clock. We have the Wood County Sheriff's Department here with us today. And Sheriff Becker, I wanted to move out of the way, let you have the floor for a moment because you had something you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, yesterday we had an individual come up, Joseph Reed, put up his book here so it can be seen. He came in and spoke with some of our inmates about his story and his struggles in life with mental health. And I got to meet Joe several months ago as he did his presentation over in Stevens Point just to people in the community. It wasn't something that was focused on specifically law enforcement or first responders, but it had a little bit of a tie-in with it. Mm-hmm. You know, he started his professional career in law enforcement, but that didn't last very long. And then he openly talks about his struggles in life, and that's why his book is called Broken Like Me. And he's very upfront about his struggles in life with his marriage, you know, being a father, and is willing to talk about it and admit it, you know, what's happened to him and how he's worked through it. You know, he just didn't do it by himself, but he got therapy. He went through commitments in his life where he was, you know, in a mental health facility because he needed to be. And he's okay with talking about that, which not many people are, you know, and it's a great story. And I got his book, I read it, and got the opportunity to talk with him after his presentation and just thanking him. Yeah. Gave him one of our mental health law enforcement patches and just say, you know, thanks for sharing your story. I go, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to come into our jail and talk with some of our inmates that are struggling. because our inmate population, you know, there's a considerable amount of people that have mental health concerns and issues. And he said, yeah. And we made that happen yesterday. He's from Michigan. He came up, and what was really what I was taken back by is I didn't know how this would go over with inmates. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what their thought was. You know, initially, there didn't seem like there was much interest. Yeah. I'll tell you what, one of our lieutenants in jail, Susanna Wagner, who's a really big part of our programming piece in our jail for the inmates, had 11 inmates come in. Our library is not that big. It was packed. And they got the opportunity to listen to Joe's story. And I didn't stay in. Just because I've seen his presentation. Yeah, yeah. And just to see how impactful that was, and once he's done with his presentation, just to see in their eyes that I feel it's going to make a difference. And out of if it makes a difference out of 1 out of 11, that's still a win. We've talked about that before, but you know, I shook everybody's hand that walked through, and you know, I hope that they you know, get something out of it. They each got his book. Joe was awesome, you know, talking with him. And this was his first opportunity to talk to people in custody. And I hope that he continues to do that because, like I said, if that makes a difference in somebody's life that made a mistake, they're going to do their time. But remember, they're going to come back to our community. And our goal is that they're going to be productive members of our community and you know, providing for their family and themselves and not coming back. And it was a nice thing to see and how it fits within that programming piece of what we're doing at the Sheriff's Department.
Apple pie, baseball, a comeback story. These are things Americans love. We love these things. It's a great book and a great idea to have him come in and talk, because we have all had low moments where we don't feel like it's going to get better or we are going to come back from something. And then there is being in prison and dealing with that. And I'm not asking anybody to feel empathy or feel sadness for an inmate. I do ask for a little empathy, though, and to put yourself in another person's shoes for a moment and understand that, well, if we got rid of every single person that has ever done any jail time or ever had a ticket or anything like that, how many of us would be left? Like, we've all gotten in trouble. We've all done things wrong at times in our life, some more than others, and that's why they are probably not going to be free. But there is the line in the sand of, as our society works, you have an opportunity here. You have a chance to be one of the things we love the most, a comeback story. Giving, you know, a reminder to them of that when they're in that position, when they're at their probably lowest of their lows. I can't think of a better time to do that, and I could not agree with you more. If it's 1 out of 11, that's not going to get you into the Hall of Fame, maybe a batting average, but it's worth it. I'll take that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, and I'm glad Joe fit in his schedule, and I hope it's something that he continues to move forward with, you know, with his presentations and getting that opportunity to talk to people that are in custody and trying to help them along the way. Because, like I said, they're going to return to our community, and we want them to succeed. We don't want them coming back to be in custody or making the mistakes or victimizing other people. We want them to be good people that are productive members of the community.
We had the 4th Branch judges race wrap up here in our community in Wisconsin Rapids. Got to have both the candidates on the air with me last week. Great time talking with both of them. Both of them did a great job, and I know you wanted to touch on this.
Yeah, you know, both candidates I know very well. Tim Giebert, who prevailed, but Craig Lamberts, our district attorney, we work well with him. You know, I want to kind of commend them both for being positive, not getting sucked into the negative campaign that we saw enough of, you know, at the Supreme Court race. And neither one of them went down that road, and that says a lot about their character as individuals. They're both going to be in positions of you know, elected officials. They both are, and I'm looking forward to working with both of them. And again, commend them both. They didn't go down that path of mudslinging or anything. They stood on their platforms and moved forward and got out in the community, and people got to meet them. So commend them both. I know it's hard to, you know, you only can vote for one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think other opportunities will come forward as we move forward. But both of them, you know, they're stand-up people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I was very thankful to see not only that, but other local campaigns being run very well. Not a lot of mudslinging or those kind of things. I've always been a big believer in you don't have to brag. Let other people brag for you. If you're good at something, other people will notice. They will mention it. I feel the same way about mudslinging. Like, if your opponent is a jerk or whatever, just give him time. He'll hang himself. Like, he'll go ahead. You don't have to mudsling. You don't have to. Just represent yourself, right? You know, do your thing. I admired that out of that race. And in other ones that I've seen in the state, I agree with you, although about the Supreme Court one as well, that's not what we need. We're more and more asking more of people in our society of every different group. I mentioned about law enforcement. We do the same thing with EMTs, with firefighters. We do the same thing with children. Like, what we're expecting of kids is more and more. And I don't mean that we do that intentionally, but all these kids are looking up at us. They're all looking up and taking this in. So the way we act right now is more than likely how they are going to act going forward. And if we act like children, they ain't ever going to grow up. If we don't treat each other with respect, they are not going to do that. If we don't treat our law enforcement with respect, they may not grow up to want to be law enforcers or law enforcement agents or be a politician or something. I'm not saying there can't be accountability or anything like that, but you can do both. You can have accountability and say, hey, this was a bad apple. And like, but look at all these. Great. Look at this forest of great apples we have over here. You can do both, and we need that. Otherwise, I don't know what society looks like 20 years from now. Right. Let's see. I hope to be here to see it. That's all I know. I always appreciate you guys being here. Thank you so much for the time. And Sheriff, I always like to mention, too, thank you for the card. My dad appreciates it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Want to thank our friends at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media as well. Taylor and the gang, say hi to everybody over there for us, Taylor. And be sure to follow along on their work. Go to YouTube, type in Wisconsin Rapids Community Media, and subscribe to their page. We'll have more Morning Magazine for you tomorrow right here on WFHR, locally grown radio.